if it's important, it has to be a priority. And for us, strength, speed, power, all of that stuff is important. Coaches are missing half the boat because strength, power, speed, all those capacities give you the ability to be more skillful. The analogy we use all the time is if everything you do on a field, skill-wise, is a drop of water, you know, lessons, everything that's involving the skill is a drop of water. What would you rather be putting that water into, a 1 gallon bucket or a 5 gallon bucket?
Hey, and welcome to Ahead of the Curve, your source for the most up-to-date baseball coaching strategies for player and coaching development. This is Jonathan Gellner. On today's show, we have on Zach Dakin, Director of Strength and Conditioning for TCU Baseball. He opens the doors for us to see basically everything that they do in the weight room. He also talks about how they lift in the offseason and in the in-season, and why they put all of their freshmen through a developmental group as soon as they hit campus. Let's get this one started with Zach Dakin. Coach Dakin, thank you for being on Ahead of the Curve.
Yeah, thanks, Jonathan. I appreciate you inviting me and look forward to a good conversation.
Oh, I am as well. I'm absolutely looking forward to it. I have been for some time. Tell us a little bit about your story and how you got to where you are today.
Well, I was an athlete in high school, obviously. I went to a really small school, a town of 300 people or so. We didn't have a weight room. We didn't have a strength coach. So I started buying weights when I was a freshman in high school with money I made in the summers working on a farm. And that's kind of how I got into strength and conditioning. I didn't know what route I wanted to go into when I went to college. And one day my dad said, you know, you've been studying weight training and how to lift for the last 4 or 5 years. Why don't you go into that? And a light bulb kind of went off. And that's, to be honest, how I got into strength and conditioning. Played football in college, and my strength coach, I actually chose the college I went to, Missouri State, because of my strength coach. He was well-known in the field, and I wanted to learn and develop after him. So that's really what kind of got me into it.
Well, that's awesome. So what roads led you to TCU?
Well, from Missouri State, I went to the University of Washington as an intern for kind of my first position. From there, I went back to Missouri State as a GA, and then spent 2 years with the Anaheim Angels in their organization. TCU was looking for somebody. Our department's a little unique in that the strength coach works with football and baseball, whereas a lot of departments, it's kind of a separate entity. And since I had played college football and been with the Angels for several years, that gave me a leg up, and here I am.
Well, that's awesome. The TCU Baseball Clinic is one of my favorite clinics around. It's one of the best ones that I've been to. And you guys and Coach Schlossnagel obviously have it going on down there. So tell us what it's like to be part of the staff there, and what are some things that you've taken from Coach Schlossnagel?
You know, to be honest, it's a perfect situation in that Coach gives me control of all facets of what we do performance-wise. You know, I control running programs, lifting programs. He's a full believer in training in season, which a lot of coaches aren't, and it kind of takes a backseat to baseball. But we don't necessarily put it in front of baseball, but Coach makes it a huge emphasis to train in season. So yeah, I'm really fortunate in the way that they treat me, and I'm a part of the staff. It couldn't be a better situation.
Well, and if I remember right, you guys were throwing around some really heavy weights at the College World Series last year.
Yeah, the last couple of years, I've posted a few things from the College World Series. And to be honest, our kids are at their strongest in season, which is what we want to be. I'm not training athletes to be power lifters, football players, bodybuilders. You know, we're not training for the off season. We train in the off season for the in season. So it drives me crazy when you see a high school kids, athletes, college athletes that don't continue training in season when they build all these measurables in the off season, and then they stop training completely. To me, it really makes no sense. It's a 3 steps forward, 4 or 5 steps backward every year. We're starting at the bottom of the mountain. So, you know, we really make in-season training a priority, and we have 24 to 26 weeks of uninterrupted training, which you don't get that in an off season. You don't get that at any other point in the year, uninterrupted. So our guys can make huge gains, and we really take advantage of that.
So what do lifts look like during the season for you guys, and how do you make time for them?
In the fall, depending on the time, obviously we have different blocks and things like that, but But during the fall, for the most part, we're a 5-day-a-week program. So we consider ourselves a high-low program. Our high-intensity days are Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Our low-intensity days are Tuesday, Thursday. So what those look like, you know, high-intensity day is a speed and power is what we start with in the indoor. From there, we move into the weight room, and we're training total body. We train the body like it's used on the field from head to toe. We don't really split body parts up, upper and lower days or anything like that. For the most part, we train the body like we want to use it. So those lifts usually last, you know, anywhere from 75 to 90 minutes on that day. And like I said, we're training all high intensity means. So speed, power, strength, if we need size, those are all in the on those Monday, Wednesday, Fridays. Our low intensity days, Tuesday and Thursdays, the kids come in. It's kind of an optional day for them, but the kids come in and they do all their soft tissue work, any individual programming that we have from them that we've discovered in a movement screen. We do small muscle groups on those days, rotator cuff, some glute work, core. And we do a lot of movement training those days. We want to reset the system so that they're ready to go when those high days come back around.
So on your high intensity days, do you guys lift heavy or light with a lot of reps? And what's your philosophy on that?
Well, to be honest, it depends on the time of year that we're looking at in the off season. Early in the off season, our guys are using a little bit lighter weight. We're trying to reset their body to get in the habit of lifting again. You know, we don't know what they did over the summer, over their summer ball seasons. A lot of them don't have access to weight rooms. So for the most part, we might not be doing a lot of high reps, but it is a lighter weight. We're trying to groove technique again. As we build in the off season, yeah, we're increasing the weight. We're going to challenge our guys. How the fall kind of breaks up is the first 4 weeks, which is what we have right now, is a reintroduction for our athletes. So like I said, we're reintroducing the movement patterns that we want to teach them. We're resetting everything that they might have lost over the summer. From there, we work into our fall ball, which is an in-season period for us. We're still working on development, but that kind of takes a backseat to the practices and to the inter squad games that we're going to play. After that, we're looking at a basic 5 to 7 week block where we're trying to either gain strength, speed, power. We're looking to raise all those measurables, but it kind of depends on the team that we have at the time, whether we're focused on one or the other. But yeah, that's kind of when our heavier weight kicks in, and we're trying to get the guys big and strong.
I know that there's a lot of our listeners that don't have the luxury of having a strength and conditioning coach. Now, are there a set core lifts that you guys work around all the time, or do you just change it up depending on year? Or tell us what your thoughts are as far as absolutes go.
You know, for coaches that have to, you know, baseball coaches that have to have a dual role, how we handle our freshmen and our developmental group. So those are all of our incoming kids that have never been with us. And this is even what I do with my high school kids that I train in camps and things like that. We have a foundation program that is based around 5 major movements. So our first movement is a squat pattern. That's number one for us. What we use in that instance is a front squat. Our second pattern is a hip hinge. That's an RDL for us. We want to teach the hip hinge. The third pattern is a push-up. You're combining a lot of core stability, scapular movement. We're not a big bench press, dumbbell bench press, anything like that program. Our fourth pattern is a horizontal pull, so a reverse pull-up or a inverted row, some might call it. And then our fifth pattern is our iso core series. So you're talking about planks, front, side, back, the entire core. And some people think the core is just the abs. The core is not just the abs. It's the entire corset around the spine for the most part.
No, I love that. And I know that we as high school coaches are really trying to differentiate for our players. Now, is there a good way to do that?
Well, you know, it becomes tough when you're playing a dual role with coaching and being the strength guy on the side. For high school, I really don't know if there's a need to differentiate. We don't differentiate a whole lot with my high school kids, like I said, in my camps. We're training them to be athletic for the most part. Like I said, we're not focused on bench press and a whole lot of upper body mass, but we're training them in correct movement patterns that are going to benefit them regardless of whether they're a pitcher, position player, you know, wherever they play on the field.
Okay, so Is there a difference between pitcher lifts and position player lifts? You just mentioned that it depends on where they're playing on the field. So do you guys break them up whenever you get to campus into pitchers versus position players?
Yeah, we do. But again, that kind of depends on the time of the year, the level of the athlete. So our younger athletes, like we talked about, the developmental group that comes in, we don't break those kids up. Everything we do is, again, based on movement patterns. And we're trying to train them the right way to kind of enter into our program. From there, they'll break up into a pitcher and position. And what separates those athletes, to be honest with you, are more upper body than lower body. And again, it depends on the time of the year. We do a neutral grip bench press with our position players, for instance, versus our pitchers are all push-up based. We don't do anything pressing-wise. I've seen trouble with that in the past, and we kind of, you know, gravitated away from that. Push-ups are great for athletes in general, but great for pitchers because you're getting, like I said, core stability, but you're getting, you know, muscles like the serratus anterior that's super, super, super important for an overhead athlete. You're getting the scaps to move. Again, super, super important. So we do a lot of push-ups with those guys. And then there's some things as we get into more specific development down the road that becomes much more aligned with what they do on a mound versus what a position player does. And a lot of that takes over even during our speed work. You know, our speed work, we differentiate a pitcher from a position player as we get into it.
I'm interested to hear in what your speed work differentiation looks like, if you could go into detail about that for us.
Well, sure. Depending on the time of year, again, there's so many variables in this. Sure. But our pitchers, we'll separate pitchers out from infielders, from outfielders, from we used to even separate catchers out a little bit. But our pitchers do mostly short sprints, but we'll also work a little bit on deceleration. I shouldn't say a little bit. With those guys, we work a ton on deceleration, controlling their body. And the reason we say that is, we want these kids to be able to field a ground ball and throw to first base without, you see it all the time. Kid goes to field a ground ball, bad position, feet slip out from under him, can't make the throw, run safe, guy's safe at first. We don't want that stuff happening, you know. Think about that happening. That seems like a very little thing, but think about that happening in the eighth or ninth inning of a Game 3 Super Regional. That's a huge, huge thing now. So we teach a ton of deceleration and body control with those guys. Some days we actually go over into our basketball court and we have reaction balls, and we'll do a little bit of reaction ball work with those guys. If you've ever seen the six-sided balls that, you know, jump in every direction that you can imagine.
Sure.
We'll do some of that. We'll do some of that with those guys. But a lot of it, we get into a lot of our speed stuff also incorporates jumps and specific jumps for those guys, specific med ball throws. I kind of throw that all under the umbrella of our speed and power work that happens before the lift. For our position players, we train the infielders with a lot of lateral reactive movement. So, you know, I'll give you an example of a drill. We'll line these guys up in groups of maybe four or five on the 20-yard line in an athletic position, and they have either a sprint 10 yards on either side, so they might be running through the 10 or the 30. They don't know. On a specific reaction, they'll have to sprint the direction that, you know, myself points or an intern or something that cues them to go that way. So they don't know which way they're going, similar to what they're doing on a field. You know, there's not a lot of agility that happens on a baseball field. Everything is linear, but you might start in a athletic position and have to go sideways for a touch before you end up sprinting. You might have a crossover run. But for the most part, everything is linear. Whether you're getting a ball in the hole, an outfielder's running to a ball in the gap, it should be straight. If it's not straight, then you probably have bigger problems than we can help you here. But, you know, everything's linear. We just change the positions that we do it out of.
And I'm thinking of it from a high school standpoint, and there may be some college coaches out there that are wondering this as well. But do you guys have time limitations? Because, again, I'm thinking from it in a high school standpoint, we might have 3 days in the weight room throughout the week with maybe an hour. So is there a certain ratio that we should be using that for, which is strength or speed, or can you give me some advice regarding that?
Well, you know, every situation's a little bit different. For us, with the way I do it with my younger athletes, like I talked about, my high school kids, we combine the two. So we generally take about an hour to maybe an hour and 10 minutes at most. but we combine the two. So we get, you know, 15, 20 minutes in of speed work. We throw med ball throws into the workout, some jumps into the workout. So we superset a lot of things. One way that we do that, if our main movement for the day, like our main movement for the day might be a trap bar deadlift, we'll superset 10 yard starts with them, you know, out of a lateral position. Or we might superset some type of jump. A 10 pound, we'll hold 10 pound plates. We have plates with handles in them. We'll superset five reactive vertical jumps with that. Later on in the workout, we'll throw in med ball throws, things like that. So we're trying to cover all our bases, but we superset a lot of activities back and forth. So upper and lower, just to save the body a little bit. But yeah, we can, it's, you know, in an hour period, it's okay to get all that in, you know. My recommendation is a little bit half and half for each one. 30 minutes for speed and power, 30 minutes for strength.
By speed work, immediately what comes to mind to me is the old school ladder agility drills. Now, that's not what you're talking about at all, is it?
Yeah, no, we're not real big on the ladder. You know, the ladder's, honestly, it's we use it as a warm-up tool, and that's really as far as it goes. It doesn't create foot speed, it doesn't create true speed, anything like that. What we're talking about is all-out sprints. So we change the position. Lateral facing facing one direction, lateral facing the other. Athletic position facing forward. I mean, that's a position that infielders are going to be on every play. We might have them creep even. You know, we'll tell them to creep a little bit, and then we'll give them a reactive direction to sprint, you know, 10 yards or so. But everything we do in our speed training is full speed. We want to be fast, you have to train fast, and that's what we're doing with our athletes. Then we give them full recoveries. Over 10 yards, we usually give them, you know, a minute rest in between, because it's not that fatiguing. As we work out further and further, we give them a little bit more rest. We're not trying to make anybody throw up. It's not conditioning for us. This is speed. And in order for us to get to be fast, we want to train fast.
Well, and I really liked what you said earlier about baseball being a reaction sport, not necessarily an agility sport. And that if we want to get the best out of our athletes, then we need to train that reactive piece as well.
If you truly look at what a baseball player does, he reacts to a stimulus, which is the ball coming at him, and then he runs in a straight line somewhere. You know, there's not cone drills, there's not ladder drills, there's no agility involved for the most part. It's a crossover run. He might have to open up and run, but it's a straight line to a point where he's obviously trying to get the ball. So that's really what we incorporate into our speed development for our, you know, if we're doing position-specific speed, that's how we incorporate it. We've had outfielders start in an athletic position, and like I said, we give them a reaction, and they turn and run the distance that we want them to, but in a straight line.
So switching gears a little bit, there has been a lot of discussion about when to get lifts in, because, again, the old school is we're going to get up at 5:30 to create toughness. And now with more and more research that's coming out, they're saying that sleep is literally the most important thing you can do for recovery. So when do you guys make time to lift?
Sure. Well, we're, I guess, the old school toughness crowd. No, our guys lift at 6:45 in the morning right now. And, you know, the reason, there's so many reasons. One is TCU has a small class schedule, so we don't have a lot of options. Outside of that, you're looking at practice schedules in the afternoon, study hall time, everything, you know, weight room size, other teams that are lifting. We only have one weight room here at TCU, which is plenty for us, but we've also got 17 teams to accommodate. So scheduling can be a factor in some of that. But for us to get our work in, we do it early. Yeah. And you're right. There's plenty of research out there that talks about sleep and, you know, not lifting in the morning, because a lot of times it can be a little bit rough on the low back, things like that. There's no perfect situation right now for us. Our scenario, it's perfect for us. But, you know, when you look at the overall program, yeah, there's, you know, situations that we have to deal with from outside circumstances.
No, and it's perfectly individualized as well. And obviously 6:45 works for you. I just remember getting up at 5:30 and going to bed at 11 o'clock going, man, this is probably not the best situation to do this.
Sure, No, you're right. And to be honest, the older I get, the earlier I go to bed now. But like I said, everybody thinks that we're at this perfect, or our program is a perfect scenario, perfect situation. I mean, we deal with issues all the time as far as scheduling and when we can get this workout in. And there's only a perfect scenario for each, you know, individual. And so what works for us, you know, might not work for somebody else. But I will say this, you know, one of the other reasons that we started the earlier workouts when I first got here, and this was 10 years ago, whether you want to call it toughness or whatever, it was for culture development. We are really big on discipline and culture. And one of the ways to kind of keep kids from, you know, going out and doing things that they shouldn't be doing late at night, one of the ways is to make them focus on getting up in the morning and doing their baseball stuff. We know they're going to go out and have fun and do stuff that college kids do. What we tell them is you need to do that stuff where it doesn't affect what we're trying to accomplish on the baseball field. And one of those things is, you know, starting in the weight room at 6:45, make sure that whatever you're doing at night or when you're doing your stuff, it doesn't affect what we're trying to accomplish as a team. So yeah, some of that is based around culture, but there's a lot of other factors that go into when, you know, when we can train.
Sure, and to just further your point, there's not a lot of jobs that they're going to be going to after they get done at TCU whenever they're in the professional world that won't be starting around 7 o'clock anyways.
Right. I mean, to be honest, 6:45 in the morning, 7 o'clock in the morning, our kids all live close. I mean, most of them are on campus. The kids are getting up at 6:15, 6:30, grabbing something quick to eat, and they're you know, running to the weight room. So is it an ideal situation? No, not necessarily, but they'll live.
Is there something that you guys do that's really unique to TCU that most other schools don't do?
I've actually got two ways to answer that question. The first thing I would say is we are a huge front squat program. We stopped back squatting probably six, seven, 8 years ago, somewhere in there. We're seeing a huge influx of pars fractures happening at the high school level now. This latest recruiting class, actually, I think we had five or six guys come in with pars issues.
And where's that at?
Out of 12 athletes. So you're talking lumbar spine.
Okay.
Basically, it's a stress fracture in the lumbar spine from overuse. These guys are extending and rotating all day, every day, select games, tournaments, practices at their high school, lessons, all this stuff. And it's an overuse injury. It's a stress fracture from overuse. There's a lot of factors that go into it, but that's primarily what it stems from is overuse. But yeah, so we eliminated the back squat in our program, and all we do is front squat now for, like I said, the past, I don't know, 6 or 7 years, and we haven't looked back. To me, it's been a blessing that we implemented that, because now what we don't see, and everybody sees this with kids that they have back squat. You know, you have a rough day, and you got a kid come up and say, you know, I tweaked my back a little bit squatting and it's giving me a little bit of pain, a little bit of problem. Whether you're training your athletes right or not, you always have a kid or two throughout a semester, throughout, you know, that always tweak their back a little bit doing the back squat. When we eliminated the back squat, we do not have problems with backs anymore. It's amazing.
And you guys still deadlift quite a bit.
Yeah, so it depends on what group you're in. Our developmental kids. Our developmental kids usually don't deadlift the first year. It's more for our advanced guys that are kind of higher up in the program. As far as development goes, our position players will do it quite a bit in the off season. Our pitchers will, deadlift in the off season. The older pitchers will, once we move to the in season, they do not deadlift at all. So we do a lot more single leg work to supplement for the deadlift. The other thing I was going to say, you know, I forgot about it. The second part of that question that I was going to get at, which is, you know, what we do differently, is sure. I kind of touched on it earlier, was the in-season training. We are huge on in-season development. Our kids still lift, for the most part, our kids are in the weight room 3 times a week in the in-season. And like I said earlier, that's when our kids are the strongest. We have kids blow the doors off previous weights during the in-season. You know, even as we get into the postseason, you saw 2 years ago on Twitter, we posted a video of a kid hitting a new PR and a 600-pound deadlift during the World Series at the College World Series.
I remember that. He was a kid.
He was kind of one of our bench contributor guys, so he wasn't an everyday starter. But that goes to show you how strong our kids are in the in-season versus the off-season. You know, in the off-season, I don't know if he deadlifted 500 pounds, to be honest with you.
So you guys are playing quite a bit during the week. How do you make time to do that? Do you do it in the mornings?
That's all based on class schedule once we get there to the end season. So we break them up into smaller groups, again, based on class schedule, so we can let them sleep a little bit. We have a group that starts, I think, at 7:30 or 8 in the morning, somewhere there. Usually our younger guys, a lot of those guys might not be playing, so it's not really as rough on them, I guess. But they've got a heavier class load throughout the day, so those guys will usually come in a little bit earlier. And then we'll have another group at maybe 10 and 12 throughout the day. And again, it just depends on, there's a lot of factors that go into the season lifts, but usually we're looking at kind of a Monday, Wednesday, Friday type schedule. A lot of times one of those days is an off day for us. So it's, you know, as per NCAA rules, it's kind of an optional lift that the kids will have the option to come in and do.
So what would you say the biggest difference between your off season lifts are versus what your in season lifts are?
During the off season, obviously we're worried about development. We focus a lot more on speed. Once the in season period starts, we drop all of our speed and a lot of our power training, to be honest. So a lot of our horizontal stuff, med ball throws, anything in a rotational plane, we actually take that out and eliminate that in the in season, because when we looked at it, the kids are taking 200-400 swings a day, possibly, over in the cages, BP, everything that's going on, you know, early work. And so we supplement all of our rotational training in the in-season with stability work, core stability work, basically just to shore up the core a little bit. Other things in the in-season, baseball is a priority during that time. We're huge on injury prevention, because if the kids aren't on the field, then they're not any good for us as a baseball player. That's why they're here. So huge take on injury prevention. With that being said, we still train the kids hard, but we're very cognizant of each athlete, and we auto-regulate the workout to them. So kid comes in fatigued, he's got a chance, he can change his workout, adjust his workout as needed, versus a kid that, you know, is super hyped up, ready to go, feels great. He's going to adjust his workout, you know, a different way than the kid that came in fatigued. So they have a lot of we have a lot of trust in our athletes, and they have a lot of say in how their workout goes in the in season.
So is that just basing it on maybe weight and sets? If they're fatigued, they just come in and do a little bit less weight and a little bit fewer sets?
Yeah, I mean, we adjust intensity and volume. So when you think about it, a kid like Evan Skaug, our catcher from last year, in the minors now, a kid like Evan Skaug playing 5 games a week, catching 5 games a week, is doing something completely different than, you know, your right fielder is, than your first baseman is. Think about the fatigue that he's going, or that he's facing, versus, you know, a kid that maybe he's a bench contributor, one of our tier two athletes that comes in and spot plays on a Tuesday night. So the freedom we give those guys is to change intensity and volume throughout their workout. We might have two ranges of percentages. So if the percentage for, you know, our heavier group is 80%, we might give 60-65 to our lighter group. And then they have the choice to drop reps, sets off the entire workout. They have the freedom to do that, change it as they want.
No, I love that, and that's throwing a lot of ownership on them. And I'm going to go ahead and throw this out there too. I don't think that Skaug missed the weight room a ton while he was there.
I mean, he's a good example to use as far as how much he played, but as far as him cutting anything out of the weight room, he's not a great example, because the kid's a machine and he feeds off the weight room. You couldn't ask for a better kid as far as the weight room goes.
Well, that's awesome. Another thing that we get a lot is the coaches who say they can't make time for the weight room in season. So what's your best advice for coaches who say that?
You know, my best advice off the top of my head is, if it's important, you have to make time. And to me, it is. That's the biggest issue I see at the high school level, is that we have athletes that, that train their tail off in the off season and get to the in season and do nothing and regress, you know. I've seen kids throw on PRs as far as bullpens go in the off season. They get to the in season and they immediately lose velocity because they're not training anymore. And that's when you want to be training. It kind of confuses me. And I understand that there's, we run into time problems and things like that. But to me, if it's important, you have to make time somewhere. Whether that's taking, you know, 30 minutes out of a practice, I guess, or, and again, it's tough for me to say because I'm not at the high school level and I don't know the schedules and the rigors that, that you guys deal with. But again, if it is important, you have to make time for it somewhere, whether it's two days a week, you know, which is enough to maintain and even develop some of your athletes. Try to make time. I mean, let me ask you this. Let me ask you this. As a high school coach, what are the issues that you guys face as far as being able to lift in season?
Well, in season, it's just the volume that we play for different states. Here in Texas, once we get into districts, we only play twice a week. But when I was in Oklahoma, we would play, you know, Monday, Tuesday, Friday, Saturday. And luckily, we had a good strength coach who we lifted on Monday mornings because mm-hmm. we always had Sunday off. So we always had the day before off. And we would sure. lift on Thursday mornings because we always had Wednesday off. So that was yeah. good. We always found a way to get 2 days in. But I hear that, you know, that we can't make time for it a lot. And so I was just, you know, obviously I wanted to get sure. your advice on that.
Oh, yeah. I hear it all the time. Well, you know, here's the other thing is we actually train our guys on game days. Our guys come in and train on game days. Now, depending on what level they are, if they're a tier one, tier two, tier three guy. So our starters might have a recovery workout, but they're coming in, they're moving around, they're doing some activation exercises. They're basically priming the system a little bit. Our guys that maybe contribute here and there, they come in and actually train. Our developmental kids that are under them, they'll come in and do a hard lift. We take that time to actually develop them. But our kids will lift on game days. And with a high school kid, honestly, the development, those kids aren't developed well enough to be fatigued from a training session prior to a game. You know, if you guys were training at, you know, 7:30 in the morning or 7 in the morning for 30 minutes and having a game that evening, that's truthfully plenty of time for recovery. And the biggest thing that you see is if you're consistent with your training and with lifting and everything that goes into it, if you're consistent, kids aren't going to be sore. They're not going to be fatigued. They're not, you know, you can develop so much in that in-season period if you're consistent with your lifts. And, you know, people want to change things and change exercises and reps and everything. If you did the same exercises, same reps, same weight even, your kids would get development out of that. And you wouldn't be looking at soreness or any of the problems that are commonly associated with that, you know, that scare people if you can maintain a rigid schedule. And that's what we do so well is we maintain the rigid schedule of consistency so that our athletes aren't sore. Because the biggest problem I saw when I was in pro ball and then came to TCU for the first year was pitchers, well, we don't want to lift this kid. You know, he's a reliever. He might throw tomorrow. So we don't want him to be sore. Don't lift him. Well, then he wouldn't throw tomorrow. He didn't throw. So he comes in and lifts. Well, since he hasn't lifted for 5 or 6 days, now the kid's sore. Well, the coach says, well, I can't have him sore. He's going to have to throw this weekend. I don't want him lifting. So then the kid doesn't lift, but then he doesn't throw that weekend. And it just becomes a huge cycle of don't lift him because he might throw. But then he doesn't throw, and now it's 2 weeks before the kid's lifted. He gets sore again. We maintain consistency so well that we don't have those problems. And if you maintain that, like I said, a rigid schedule, you won't come across kids being sore and stiff and fatigued like you think you would.
So I'm going to lob this next question up to you. Why should coaches and players prioritize the weight room?
Well, you know, if it's important, it has to be a priority. And for us, strength, speed, power, all of that stuff is important. You know, the pendulum has swung so far to the side of lessons and skill work that coaches are missing half the boat because strength, power, speed, all those capacities give you the ability to be more skillful. The analogy we use all the time is if everything you do on a field skill-wise is a drop of water, you know, your lessons, everything that's involving the skill is a drop of water. What would you rather be putting that water into, a 1 gallon bucket or a 5 gallon bucket? And that's really the way to look at it is that you're building the capacity to have a lot more water, which is a lot more skill. Those two qualities feed off of each other, athletic ability and skill work. So these athletes that only do lessons are missing so much of the boat. And, you know, if we could just get it across that they're going to be healthier, they're going to be, you know, bigger, faster, stronger, and you're going to have the capability to be more skilled on a baseball field if you train your body other than just doing lessons and skill work and things like that. You have the potential to be a lot better baseball player.
Sticking on the subject of high school, now, what is something that we as high school coaches need to do a little bit better in the weight room so that you don't have to do it whenever they get to you? So, I love the idea of having all of your freshmen go through like a basics course. I think that's fantastic. But what's one thing that you could pick out that you want us to do better with our kids?
Well, for us, you know, the number one thing I would say that I see with incoming athletes is the backside. The backside is too weak. It does not get enough attention at the high school level. And when I say backside, I'm talking glutes, hamstrings, and scaps. Everybody wants to press. Everybody wants to train the muscles on the front side, bench press, abs, you know, pretty muscles. They want to train the mirror muscles, beach muscles. Performance happens on the backside. Pretty is on the front side. Performance is on the backside. You want to keep kids healthy. Honestly, get kids strong and fast. It all happens on the backside. Scaps, glutes, and hamstrings are the powerhouse of athletic performance.
So what are some exercises you could give us to be able to train the backside?
For us, like I talked about earlier, the two movement patterns that we focus on the most are the RDL. Some people, you know, do a stiff-legged deadlift, kind of a variation, but we focus on the RDL, teaching that hip hinge pattern. That's hammering glutes and hamstrings. The second pattern is the reverse pull-up, inverted row, whatever you want to call it. And we teach athletes the scapular pattern that we want, which is, you know, letting the shoulder blades fully out, retracting and depressing as you come up. We want full motion throughout the shoulder blade. You know, a lot of athletes you see cut those motions off. They don't let their arms fully extend all the way. It's like what you see in a pull-up. Guys will go down to 90 degrees at the elbow and go back up and you do these short, choppy motions. We want to teach the scaps to move fully around the rib cage. Those are our two biggest patterns right there. Our two biggest patterns for the backside is the RDL and the reverse pull-up. And like I said, when we have our developmental athletes in the weight room, with the July period that we get a July period of 4 weeks with them, our freshmen. We train these patterns 5 days a week. We squat, RDL, hip hinge, our reverse pull-up, ISO core series, our push-up. We do these patterns 5 days a week to ingrain them. And this is actually what I spoke on last year at the Texas High School Baseball Coaches Association Clinic. I presented this program and or how we handle our developmental program and what I do with our high school athletes in our camps and things like that. And it's all based around those five patterns. And we hammer every day, 5 days a week.
So are those slides available for us to find online?
Yeah, it's actually they're available on my website, zachdakin.com, and they're integrated with the PowerPoint slide with the presentation itself. So you actually, I mean, it's kind of a great little package. It's a 40-minute PowerPoint or a 40-minute video. I'm sorry, and they enter their email, sends them the video, and so it's all right there.
Perfect. Can't wait to watch that. So let's talk a little bit about yourself. Going back to your first yourself, if you could give yourself any advice, what would that be?
Well, geez, that list is long, huh? The first thing I might say is don't get locked into one way of thinking too much. Back then, you know, I'd come from a football background. A lot of times I thought strength was the only way. I'd get locked in, like you hear about. A good example is the back squat. Everybody thinks the back squat's the king of exercises, right? The bench press is the only way to train the upper body. You can't get locked into thinking like that. You know, this is just a small piece of the puzzle to athletic development. And there's a ton of roads that lead to that you can take. It doesn't have to be, you know, one thing here, one thing there. There's a ton of different ways to do it. And you don't want to get locked into one idea, married to one idea, so to speak. That's number one. Number two would probably be networking. I didn't realize the importance of networking as a coach, you know, starting out, I guess. And so that's a huge priority. That's something that we teach our interns, actually, during the internship program here at TCU, is that we give them assignments. You know, you've got to go network with three coaches this week. Email them, call them, strike up conversation, build a relationship with them, because the networking is going to take you way further than, you know, that piece of paper that has your name on it.
So what would your advice be for someone wanting to get into the strength and conditioning side of things?
The first thing that you really have to do is you have to volunteer. It's a rough road in strength and conditioning the first couple years, but finding an internship, finding somebody that can mentor you a little bit is probably the number one way. You know, what we look for when we hire interns, we generally look for somebody that has previous experience in a weight room. So you want to see somebody that's been around it a little bit, and or we want to see somebody that has athletic experience, that's been through some type of strength and conditioning program. Because what you find a lot of times are, when you do that, you kind of weed out the people that just want to be around an athletic department, a football team, you know, some big name athletes, things like that. You weed out some of those people. So that's what we really look for, is somebody that has a little bit of previous experience working as an intern, and then somebody that has, you know, college athletic experience. It's been through a program, a strength and conditioning program, but it all starts volunteering. It starts with finding a mentor and volunteering your time, showing them that you want to be there.
Strength and conditioning isn't my forte, and it's definitely not something I have a lot of background in. So for someone like myself looking to find more information about strength and conditioning, what are some of your top 3 to 4 resources that you'd recommend?
You know, the list could get long there too. But number one, for coaches that need an easy way to implement a program, the thing that we, again, teach our interns when they first get here on how to program is a book by Joe Kinn. He's a Carolina Panthers strength coach. But while he was at Arizona State, he wrote a book called The Coach's Strength Training Playbook. It's an easy-to-implement system. 3 days a week, that's actually what I started out with when I was an intern and a GA, how I started developing programs. It's kind of a piecemeal program that's super, super easy for an outside, you know, somebody outside the field of strength and conditioning to implement, for coaches like yourself. The second book that, in my opinion, that changed my outlook on how I did everything was Ultimate Back Fitness and Performance by Stuart McGill. It's a super, super easy read. It sounds really difficult, but it's a super easy read, and it's all geared towards athletic development and how you treat and handle the core and the low back, because whether you like it or not, everybody is going to have low back problems at some point in their life. Hopefully not as an athlete, but you're going to have issues that pop up, you know, low back wise. Everybody has that. I started having it after my playing days, and it was the book that completely changed my outlook on how I train my athletes, how I train myself. That's probably my number one book. But like I said, the Joe Kinn book is phenomenal for coaches that aren't strength coaches that need to find a way to implement a program.
Well, and I know you didn't come on to self-promote, but you have a fantastic website as well. And can you tell us a little bit about that?
Honestly, that just came from coaches like yourself emailing me. I started that about 7 years ago, 7 or 8 years ago. Started it from coaches emailing me all the time and asking questions. So I thought this would be an easy way to answer a lot of questions and, you know, put some content out there so coaches maybe knew how to train athletes better without having to go through 15 emails a day and type, you know, a different response to every one. That's really how it started. And, you know, I try to keep up on it as much as possible. And I'll say in the last couple of years, I've done a better job of it, but it is so hard. It's not easy because my time's limited. We work long days, and a lot of times the last thing you want to do at, like I said, 8 o'clock at night when I get home from training athletes is sit down for another hour and try to write an article. So yeah, there's spans of time where I miss a couple of weeks, but I try to do the best I can to just help coaches and put information out there.
Well, Coach Dakin, thank you so much for coming on the show and investing some time with us today. Now, I know there will be some listeners who want to get in touch, and we already discussed your website, which I'll link in the show notes. So are there any other ways that our listeners can follow you online? And also, you mentioned you do training outside of TCU. So for our listeners that may be interested in that, can you tell us more about it?
Yeah, sure. Well, you know, like you said, my website, www.zachdakin.com, is that's my blog where I post everything. But the biggest thing we do is on Twitter for the most part. That's a huge baseball resource. Twitter has been, and that's, you know, just my name, Twitter, whatever it is. My handle is Zach Dakin. That's where I also post all the performance camps. So if we're doing a strength and speed camp for athletes, we post it on there. I'll pin it to the top. Usually we try to have, we have a camp kind of over each period of, I guess, period of training time that, you know, a summer period, we'll have a fall period. And then a lot of times we'll still do a spring in-season period. Our numbers kind of dwindle there because a lot of kids stop coming. Like I said, they stop training in the in-season, which is disappointing, but we'll still do a little bit of a camp there. So usually we have three a year, or try to get three a year in summer, fall, and spring. And they can find that information on the Twitter. So we have an Instagram, or I have an Instagram as well. I don't use that as much for the baseball stuff, but we try to post a little bit here and there.
Perfect. So before you go, is there anything else you'd like to tell our listeners?
Honestly, it was a pleasure, and you know, I enjoy talking to you and talking strength and conditioning and development. I just enjoy talking it with anybody, and like I said earlier, you're completely welcome to come over and watch our training sessions. And you know, one thing that we're working on right now is putting out some material on that developmental program and how to train your high school kids to move better. You know, we're worried about movement, not maxes. And so right now we're kind of working on in the early stages of working on a book to put out for high school coaches, that an easy to implement program based around our developmental system. That way it kind of takes the thinking out of it for a baseball coach like yourself.
Well, I think we're all looking forward to that coming out. But Coach Dakin, thank you again for being on the show.
Yeah, thanks, Jonathan.
Thank you for listening to Ahead of the Curve. I would love to get in contact with you to hear your thoughts on the podcast. There are two easy ways to do that. You can email me at jgelner7@gmail.com or find me on Twitter at @AOTC_podcast. Also, do you like to share ideas and have conversations with other baseball coaches? Just go to facebook.com and search Ahead of the Curve Coaches to join our group. It's free, so what have you got to lose? If you're enjoying the podcast, please consider leaving a rating so others can find the show. Thanks for listening, and have a great week.